White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 413.
I'm Brandon Marcello, and you're listening to the AU Wishbone.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
We welcome you to Jordan Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone.
Now everybody, come on everybody.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yo, yo, yo.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com. And by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I just want to point out, John, yeah, I'm still alive, by the hardest, I think. I'm not exactly 100%, Coach, but I'm joined. I didn't even introduce you. I'm joined, as always, by my fabulous co-host.
I'm John Ringer, and I'm glad you're here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Very glad this week. When you consider that I was just in the middle of major surgery on Friday, and this is Tuesday, so I feel like I'm doing about as well as could be done, you know?
Yes, you are.
I've been taking it easy. I've been binge watching The Boys on Amazon Video and eating pudding and things of that nature, but my energy level is very low. I mean, I it's a different world now in terms of what I'm able to do for a while. I'll be like, "Oh, I feel good," and then 2 seconds later I'm like a cat, I'm asleep, you know. So we'll do as much of the show tonight as we can. We're planning on kind of skipping along here, going fairly quickly. I think we'll if you guys will do me the indulgence just for this episode at least, I'm not going to go through all the names. In my current state, it would take me 30 minutes to get through all of our all of our donor names. But I am feeling, I think, about as good as can be expected. And I appreciate all the all the good wishes from everybody on Twitter and Facebook and emails and things. I've just really been touched by people sending me so many prayers and good wishes and everything. I really appreciate that, because it's kind of a scary thing, you know. With our modern medical system, you have to have confidence that they're going to get in and do everything right and get you put back together. But it's still kind of a scary prospect when you're waiting to be, you know, wheeled back into that room. So, I tell you what, we've got great doctors up here in the St. Louis area and great nurses that took care of me afterward. And I just, I'm about as grateful as I could be. So
did watching the Auburn offense help or hurt your recovery?
Oh, I have to be careful about that. You know, it's funny. There's currently three things that just hurt me really badly. Coughing, standing up from a seated position, and laughing. I was watching The Boys, and I got to a scene involving a dolphin and 18-wheeler, and I thought I was going to rip every one of my sutures loose. Yeah, the frustration I was feeling Saturday night didn't help a lot. Although I got to say that having Auburn football, actual live Auburn football, to look forward to, you know, the day after the operation, gave me something to look forward to. So regardless of how it went, you know, as long as it wasn't us like losing the Iron Bowl or something that weekend, just knowing that we had a game that we should win and I'd get to enjoy that, I enjoyed it about as much as you could possibly enjoy something like that. So my thanks to Auburn football for giving me something to look forward to during that time.
Awesome.
But yeah, we can talk a little bit about how it went, because I mean, I have been seeing how Auburn Twitter has been in a tizzy, and then some of the Auburn email folks that I follow too have been kind of, shall we say, less than satisfied. So what are your thoughts about that?
I think we have some of the unhappiest 2-0 fans in America.
Yeah.
And I understand it.
Well, we've seen this movie before, I think, is what they're thinking.
Yes, but I think there's some things that they've missed in that unhappiness. Again, I think we've beaten two good teams. I think a lot of other teams haven't played a good team yet.
Yeah.
And I think we've beaten two good teams. I think Tulane is far better than a lot of Auburn fans think. And in both of those games, not only did we win, we covered the Vegas spread.
Yeah.
So we didn't look great. We didn't look like a well-oiled offensive machine.
No.
But we're still a pretty good team.
But you know what, John? Think how many key players on offense we're currently down. I mean, we're two games into the season, and half of our receiving core is down, and our Whitlow was hurt against Oregon. He seems to be okay, but he's putting the ball on the ground now. And I just, knowing that all of, the playmakers on offense, this is how it comes across to me. When our entire offense is healthy, we have a handful of playmakers that can get it done in the SEC level of competition. And it just seems like right now, like the two main receivers that are able to make plays are both coming off of catastrophic multiple knee injuries, and the one that was on the rise just got hurt and may not play for a while. So, it feels like we always talk about the bullets in our gun, and I feel like our gun's being emptied of, they're taking the clip out and just dropping bullet after bullet out of it. And they're not leaving us with a lot of weapons right now.
No, 100%. And I would say that your comment in the preseason about diversity is not depth at the running back position was so true. And we can see it now how true it is, because here's the depth chart at running back in reality.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's Booby Whitlow, Cam Martin, in the coaches' minds, not in our minds.
Right.
And DJ Williams. Period. That's the depth chart, okay? For every down, carrying the ball between the tackles, running back in the SEC. That's the depth chart. DJ Williams is hurt. He got hurt on Tuesday as a hip pointer or whatever. He should be back. Hopefully he can play this weekend, but because I really, really, really want to see that, but I'm not holding my breath about that. So, and will this coaching staff play him against Texas A&M if he hasn't played another game yet? I don't know that, but we may have to throw him in there.
And I didn't realize that Sean Shivers had transferred away, but apparently, because we haven't.
It's your diversity is not depth thing. He's not an every down running back. He's a change of pace, special gadget play running back. And.
But they're not even using him for those.
No.
I don't understand. And, I failed even, when I was going down the litany of receivers with issues, I didn't even mention Schwartz I didn't even realize. I knew he broke his hand or whatever. I thought, he's dinged, He has like five breaks in the bones of his hand. I mean, did he get it caught in a car door or something? Get dragged down the street by his hand? What the heck happened to him? Five broken bones in his hand?
And there's a lot of small bones in your hand. It kind of got caught by somebody's helmet or something. But
jeez,
the funny part about that is we threw him the ball Saturday night.
I guess they thought
what was that?
I guess they thought he'd get lodged between all those broken bones and he'd catch it like Velcro.
That I'm sorry, we got guys on the receivers on the bench were not playing. We would throw it to a guy with a giant cast on his hand. I think it's just that part was insane. But you asked me, can we go back to the big question?
Well, I want to say I thought that maybe they had Schwartz out there as a decoy, and Nix forgot and just threw the ball to him.
because he doesn't play but a handful, like a couple snaps a game. So when they bring him in the game, it's for a purpose. You asked me in the big picture, how do I feel? And the simple answer is, I feel pretty good. I mean, Bo Nix is a freshman quarterback. I expect him to struggle. He hasn't practiced with these wide receivers much at all. I mean, say they were all healthy, okay? You know, Schwartz didn't go through spring practice. Seth Williams didn't go through most of fall practice. So Nix has no time with them.
Yeah.
And it takes time to get that connection, that anticipation, that kind of stuff. It doesn't happen by accident. It doesn't, you know, just because you call the play and the receiver goes here, it's not that simple. Everybody's different, and the quarterbacks get to know them and their tendencies and what they're thinking and stuff. And he doesn't have that. The one guy he seems to have it with right now is Hastings. And so I think this is my prediction about that. We'll see if Seth Williams is back in a game or two, if he's back for A&M or shortly after that, then I think the passing game, in midseason, at the end of October, say, is going to look dramatically different than it does now.
Yeah.
The reason to be concerned if you're an Auburn fan is the running game.
Yeah. And that goes back to the offensive line.
Yes, which I think a lot about the question the Oregon guy asked us on guest podcast we did with them about, is there a reason to believe the offensive line will be better other than they're more experienced? That's the question that Oregon guy asked, and I think the answer is no. They have experience and they're more cohesive, but the middle of our offensive line does not get good push. That's it. Kim and the two guards are not pushing people out of the way. We used to have some absolute road graders at guard, a couple years ago, and we don't have those right now. And the center is a liability in the run game.
Yeah.
And so we're really good when we pull the guards and run to the outside. They're good at that when they get out in space and they're running, and we run to the side where we have one of the pulling guards and the tackle out there. The simple answer is like runs up the middle, we're averaging 3.2 yards a carry, and runs to the outside, we're averaging basically like 6 yards a carry. But the basic zone, inside zone running play that Gus runs all the time, that we've run forever, we're not good at it because our guys can't push guys up, away. We don't have a big bruising fullback that can go into the hole and create that space. There's no Prosh, whatever. It's Spencer Nine. He's okay on the perimeter, but the perimeter blocking has been an issue too. The wide receiver blocking has been poor. Seth Williams in particular, before he got hurt, was half-assing it. And when you see those outside plays and the defenders are standing there waiting on, the Auburn running backs, then somebody missed it. But part of what I think is going on is the defense is so good, but especially like against Tulane, it was obvious early in that game that we were going to be fine. Like, I get it. They had some shots and all that kind of stuff. But I think, Gus is in the defense has got this. We're going to play around with the offense and figure stuff out. And I think he's doing that thing that we've seen in past years where he's going through and going, okay, this works, this doesn't work. And I think when we come out for Texas A&M, they're going to throw out all the stuff that doesn't work. This is my theory. I don't know if this is true or not. But I think we're going to do the things they know this team can do and not do the things it can't do. I mean, the other thing is, for example, we would be, again, if we just wanted to beat Tulane, if that was the Super Bowl, we would have run Bo Nix a lot more. And because that will open up the running game, doing the zone read with him, and because he's very effective at running the ball. We can do other kinds of runs with him too. We could do some old school kind of bootlegs and or rollouts and stuff where it's a run pass option and the receivers go out and he just keeps it and runs. And I think that kind of thing will open up the whole offense when we start doing that more. But we are not going to do that against a team like Tulane. Yeah, we're not going to expose him and we're not going to
Yeah, be stupid. I have found it interesting that Gus has told us that at halftime of both games so far, the offensive line players have come to him and said, let's run the ball. And I'm thinking, well, the problem isn't that we're not choosing to run the ball. The problem is that you're not making that an option worth pursuing enough.
That's right.
And so, he said that they went to some kind of, like, they changed their system, like, went from, like, from zone to gap or something in the second half.
Which is kind of what I was talking about. Like, the zone blocking is where they just, everybody advances, and whoever's in your area, you block that guy, right? Yeah. It's very simple.
Yeah.
And the other blocking is much more like assignment kind of football. And they are better at that. And so we may have to get away from the zone block. And we've had teams in the past where we did that a little bit. It's not the end of civilization. Okay. But Gus, there were some times in that game when Gus did the bang his head against the wall. You know, like we ran the same inside zone play three times in a row when it was like, you know, second and two, third and two, fourth and two, same play, same formation, same personnel. And Gus was like, go block him, whatever. And we got nothing.
Yeah.
So there was some of that kind of thing, which I know drives everybody crazy. But I think it was kind of him, you know, telling the offensive line, like, do it. And they can't do that. So, but you combine that with what you said at the beginning about the receiver injuries and the bullets in the gun thing, and that is a concern.
Yeah, I feel like we've abandoned our entire intermediate passing game that we used to have that involved like Lutzenkirchen and throwing to the fullback and stuff like that, and passes in the flat. You know, I feel like we're only either doing various types of runs or bubble screens out wide or just deep balls to the sides. We've basically forfeited the middle 70% of the field as well as the immediate flat on either side of the quarterback. What I mean, is that just Gus has his one type of thing he wants to do and he doesn't want to do anything else? Or
I think it's some of that. I think they're trying to limit things because of Nix. They're not letting him do everything. You know, they're not giving him five options on a play. They're giving him like one or two. And then it's like, throw it away.
Yeah.
So I think they're purposely not doing that stuff. I mean, to me, we talked about Shivers, like, put him in the game and, you know, send the receivers downfield and have him run, you know, a little flare out thing. And that, I just feel like that will work 100 times out of 100. I don't understand that. Like the play that Hastings caught the touchdown on was the old school, like, four verticals, okay, where all four wide receivers go straight down the field.
Yeah.
And, again, we could do a lot more of that kind of stuff because then the defensive backs are all turned and running. So if you throw it to the running back and he gets away, you're making a big gain. Or if Nix runs and the defensive backs are all running, they're turned, their heads are turned toward the other direction and they're running that field. So I just think, like, yes, you're exactly right. We've seeded the middle of the field and we've seeded kind of the short, easy passes. Like, I think that pass to Nye that we completed against Oregon is there a lot.
Yeah.
And the pass to the running back is there, not the wheel route, the kind of dump off pass that you're thinking about.
Right.
So,
what is wrong with our punt coverage?
Wow. That part was really frustrating. Of the Tulane game, that was maybe the most frustrating part. One thing is, it seems like he's not getting the ball as high as he did last year. He's kicking it far, but it's a little lower and straighter. Mm. And I think and Gus talked about this, but I'm 100% sure this is what they want, is they're going to tell him, kick it 10 yards shorter, but just kick it up in the air, and we want the guy to make a fair catch. Because, I mean, again, if he's punting at 50 yards and the guy runs it back 25 yards, the net's 25. But if he punts it 35 yards and the guy fair catches it, the net's 35 yards. So that's what we want. We Absolutely. Don't want him to punt it 50 yards because, you know, I think sometimes he's out punting the coverage, but the coverage has been bad. There were several times on Saturday when there were multiple Auburn punt coverage people with no one blocking them, and they absolutely didn't come close to making the tackle. So that's just bad tackling. One of them is the long snapper. You can't block the long snapper, and he's a white guy. He's number 60, and I don't expect him to make the tackle against some of these guys, but he should be able to hem the guy in so the other guys can actually make the tackle, and it's not been pretty.
Amen. No. I just don't know how you go from, like, top 10 in the country to last. I think we're last currently.
We are 100% last in punt coverage right now.
Unbelievable against Oregon and Tulane. Unbelievable. But the defense, I mean, what can we say? I mean, if we had a defense playing about the same level as our offense and our special teams right now, we'd be 0-2 and looking at a really bad year. But that defense is elite, and it is indeed keeping us in these games.
It's not just keeping these games, like, it is dominating these games. And I think this is the part that does make me a little bit angry. When people want to bemoan this team and poo-poo this team, our defense absolutely controlled two pretty good offensive teams. I mean, Oregon went out last week after we beat them with defensively pretty solidly. They went out last week and played Nevada, the team that upset Purdue in week one. And they put up like 600 yards of offense on them.
Yeah.
And their offense is really good. And we shut them down. And Tulane had like 450 yards rushing, whatever, week one. And we shut them down. I mean, after that first drive, we absolutely dominated them defensively. I think they went 2 of 13 on third down.
Yeah.
The secondary is better than it was last year. We're not giving up the big pass play things over the top like we did. We have a lot of good young players. There's a lot of depth. You know, we were kind of worried about depth, a defensive tackle, but Truesdale's come in and played really well. Newkirk's come in as a backup. And then you got, you know, Coe and Derek Brown. And Derek Brown's been really, you know, awesome as we expected. But the linebackers have been great. And the secondary has been really, really good. McCreary has come in as kind of the third cornerback, and he's kind of splitting time with Javaris Davis. And honestly, he's been better than Javaris Davis, but, you know, he gives me real hope that next year, like, Davis is going to be gone and Edwin Nyagani is probably going to go pro, that he's, you know, one of those spots is going to be McCreary's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, the numbers, I mean, Tulane had 103 yards passing, 120 yards rushing. That's pretty darn good. 3 yards per pass. And
that's pretty good.
That's pretty good. And, of course, we didn't have any interceptions, and we had the ball 10 minutes longer than they did. So, and third down efficiency, they were two for 15, and we were 10 for 19. So that's pretty good, too. So, and if you, you know, you took it just the second half, of course, the numbers get all the much better even than that. So, yeah, well, that was Tulane, the Green Wave, and it wasn't the cupcake we probably expected in some ways. I think I don't think they're a great team by group of five standards.
No, but again, they play in the same conference as Central Florida, Memphis, Houston. Okay. If we beat Central Florida 24-6, people would be pretty happy. If we beat Houston 24-6, people would be pretty happy. If we beat Memphis 24-6, people would be pretty happy. But I think in a lot of Auburn fans' mind, Tulane is the same team they were 10 years ago whenever they went 0-12 and they were in the Sun Belt or whatever. And they're not that team. They're pretty good. And the advanced stats stuff, their defense is 36 in the country, one spot ahead of LSU.
Wow.
So, their defense especially is pretty good. And overall, I think they're a solid team. I think they're going to win a bunch of games this year. So we'll see. Yeah,
we'll see. All right. Well, that was the week that was. That was Tulane. We do get I would assume, more of a breather next week with Kent State. We'll talk about that in a minute. But I got to tell you, John, one of the things that pulled me through and kept me having looking forward to the future is that I had to know the latest. I had to know an update. I had to know what the latest happening was with Jared's Eagle. Right, our good friend Jared Ulrich, the yard sale artist, part of our network. He does our superhero analogy battles where he kind of compares our most recent game to two superheroes and villains, whatever, fighting. And his eagle gives its commentary. And so I have our latest installment for us. And by the way, I was just, I was at Dragon Con the weekend before my operation. And so Jared was so awesome. I don't know if I said this on the last show when we were kind of doing two separate shows glued together there because of circumstances. But Jared is so awesome, and I just want to thank him publicly for all he does at Dragon Con. He got us an Airbnb, which was awesome, and Delvin came and stayed with us at least, I think, one night, two nights. It was awesome, all three of us hanging out. And he also brought my books over that I had shipped to him to sell, and he brought them over and set them up at my table before I even got there. So, I mean, then he took what was left, and there wasn't much left. I did really well. I was very excited. Took it all back, so I can't thank him enough. So let's find out what's happening with Jared and his eagle this week as he gives us this latest superhero battle analogy of the Auburn-Tulane game.
Hello, everyone. This is Jared Ulrich, the yard sale artist from the Long Box Crusade Podcast Network, here with your Auburn University superhero battles. Well, this was an interesting one because we certainly didn't look as powerful as I would have liked. So I'm not ready to put us in top tier power heroes, but I think I'll still give us a good hero. For this Auburn versus Tulane, I'm seeing Tulane as the Riddler, not just because they're green, but because they weren't as physical as Auburn, but they had a good game plan. And the Riddler is kind of famous for that good, thoughtful planning, and that's how he's able to be successful. And of course, Auburn is going to be represented by the Dark Knight Batman himself. Not super powerful, but very well respected. And just like most battles go between Batman and the Riddler, once Batman gets his hands on the Riddler, it's not much of a competition anymore, but the Riddler did a good job using his smarts, so as you can see, Tulane was smart with what they did, but once our Auburn University Batman got the hands on him, it was pretty much a done deal there in the second half. We'll hopefully get a power upgrade in an upcoming episode, but for now, I'll leave you with that. I'll give you a War Eagle, and Pat, go ahead and get the mascot out. No, Pat, not that door, not that mascot door, the other mascot door.
Poor Pat, he's Jared's producer over there at Longbox. He got mauled by the eagle last week, and now he's gotten mauled by the tiger. I didn't even know we had a tiger. Wow. I guess we have a tiger now. Well, while we're seeking medical aid for Jared's co-host and producer, let's look a little bit ahead at Kent State, if that sounds good to you. The one thing I know about them is this is, other than their Vietnam War history, tragically, is that they are Nick Saban University, yes?
They are.
Oh, and their quarterback.
They're on the roster is former Auburn quarterback Woody Barrett.
Yes.
Unfortunately, he lost his job last week, I think, and has been replaced.
Oh. So we're not going to see Woody?
Well, if the game goes, they are much, much, much worse than Tulane. They are really, really, really bad. So I think if we're beating them a good bit, they may play Woody. They're not a good team. They're from the MAC. The coach is a former Syracuse assistant. They run the Syracuse-Baylor offense. And they go fast and kind of spread the field, but they don't have nearly the talent. They are the team that runs like 50 screen passes a game. That's that kind of team.
Oh,
okay.
Boy. All right.
And that's going to be a problem for them, when Owen Pepo and Denson are standing there waiting for the screen pass.
It might be a little bit.
So I think tackling in space, Auburn, will do that, and we'll have some good success. And I think their defense is you know, not nearly as good as the first two teams we played. So we ought to be able to get some better offensive success this week.
All right. Well, I think we're going to go out and let – I think we'll see a good bit of Joey Gatewood, don't you?
Yes. I think we're going to get ahead and we're going to get Nick – I mean, again, we want to get Nick some chances and then we're going to get him out of there and play Gatewood.
Yeah, we want to – here's the quandary, though. We want to get Nick's a number of passing opportunities, but at the same time, we don't want to throw the ball as much as we had to in the first half against Tulane.
Yes. So, no, I think you're right. I think that, like, 10 attempts, then run the ball, get him out of there.
They're going to try to get the offensive line and the running backs going in this game. I imagine we're going to see
100%.
I imagine we're going to see all the backs getting some carries in this game. I think Whitlow will get, what, 7 or 8, 10, maybe 12 at the most carries, all in the first quarter.
Yes.
And then Shivers, and then where do you go? And
Martin.
Martin
is going to be next.
Yeah, Martin will get some. And then Shivers, and then you think we'll get one of the freshmen if they're healthy, or
well, Mark Anthony Richards is hurt. He's not going to be probably not going to play at all this year. Hmm. So if DJ Williams is healthy, 100% he will play in this game.
Yeah.
If he's not, then I think it'll be, you know, a lot of Cam Martin.
Yeah.
And then a lot of Shivers, and then maybe some Malik Miller. So.
Oh joy.
And I'm just – that's the situation.
Malik Miller comes out on the field. President Adams once told Malik Miller, someday, son, you'll get in the game again and not just as a blocking back. So, I don't have a whole lot else about Kent State. I just
the golden flashes.
Golden – it's a flash in the pan, John. That's all it is. Well, let's see. I'm imagining that we might have, since I sent out the word, and I'm sure you did, I imagine that, where did it go? Did I redo it? I guess I redid it.
Thank you. Order, questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone Podcast.
What do we got?
All right. We did get a number of questions that were mostly well wishes. I want you to know that.
Well, I appreciate that. I do.
All right. A first question is from Delvin.
Yay, Delvin.
D-Ray 1977. He says, I've heard a ton of negativity surrounding Auburn and where the program from fans, even more so than usual. What's your take on any of that? I know it's a broad question, so take it however you want.
Yeah, I've seen Delvin fighting the good fight, and I've put in a few words, too. I mean, I've had not much else to do sitting around other than watch movies except tweet and stuff, so I've been more active than usual even, which is scary. But, no, he's right. I mean, there was just a crowd, the anti-Gus crowd, this is just raw meat, right? When we struggle to run the ball and we score 24 points on Tulane, this is just raw meat thrown out there for the anti-Gus crowd, and I wasn't really that surprised, even though we won. And, we've done our one episode where you did your trial thing. That was awesome, and I've referred people to that. But also I'd point out, you know, I can see both sides of it in a way, because it does seem like we're kind of stuck in a rut. And every year we think, well, this is the year we get it figured out, and more often than not, it's back to 8-5 again. So there's a number of reasons for that, which are just unavoidable. And every year can't be 2013 or 2010, or 1988 or whatever. But, you know, I don't know. I just hate that we get so divisive so quick and poison the well before we even have to, you know? I mean, I wish we could make it through the year and then render judgment rather than starting to render judgment two games into a 12-game plus season.
And, again, I think if we had a few more first downs running the ball, they'd probably be a little quieter.
Yeah.
But I think it's like most things in life, it's anticipation of pain.
Yeah.
And they look at our team and they look at us trying to move the ball on offense and they go, how's that going to work against Georgia or Alabama?
Yep.
And that's what people – that's 100% what people are thinking.
Yep.
And that's fair. But it's – I would also say we have seen the Gus offense for a number of years now, and it doesn't always look in game 4 or 5 like what it looked like in game 1 or 2. So I think – I 100% think there's going to be some evolution coming.
And the thing I keep going back to is people measure us. There's 120 teams in Division One, right? There's around 120 teams. And so many Auburn people want to measure us against just one of them. And if we're not Alabama, we're nothing. We're garbage. We're throw us out. We're trash. And we don't have to – I mean, Alabama is enjoying a very unique stretch of – seasons right now that most programs never get. And the only program in the country that's having anything like it the last few years is Clemson. And even they have only had like three or four, not the sustained run Alabama has. It's just that that's who we're measured against. And so it's like if we're number two even, that's not good enough. We have to be better than Alabama or as good as Alabama, or we're not even worth talking about. I'm like, you know, like I was having an argument yesterday with a guy who was saying, you know, we haven't accomplished anything. I'm like, we were just in the SEC championship game 2 years ago. And he's like, well, we didn't win. I'm like, well, yeah, but what other team besides Alabama has even been in it since 2011? You know, I mean, we're out of 14 teams in the SEC, out of all the West, we've had the second most success. Yeah. So it's just we're just garbage if we're not Alabama.
I hear you.
I mean, that's to me, that's it. To me, that's if we were in Mississippi, or if Auburn was in Tennessee right now, or if Auburn was in West Virginia or Arizona or anywhere else, and our rival was like Arizona State, or our rival was, you know, even like Michigan or something, Gus would be seen as doing a great job, and our last few teams would be seen as really good teams. But because we are measured against that one measuring stick, which we've talked about before, historically, we are not the number one or number two program in the country. We're just not. And I just don't know where people think we're going to push this magic button and suddenly be what Clemson is right now. That was like a 1 in a million that Clemson could be what they are right now. That doesn't happen all the time. Clemson's having 2010, 2013 Auburn on like a 4 or 5 year stretch. And that's just a total fluke. That's not sustainable. They're not always going to be like that. And it just, I'm going to use up what little energy I have on this.
Save your energy. Let's answer a couple more questions.
Let's do it.
This is a question from Jeremy Minton.
Yay.
And I think it's a good question. He says, hey, here's a question for the show to talk about. People used to say that offense wins games, but defense wins championships. Is that still true in today's football? LSU won a high scoring game, giving up over 500 yards, and people say they're great and will be in the playoffs, but Auburn can win every game 3-0 to go 15-0, and Auburn fans will complain. Why such a difference?
Yeah, it's a fair question. I don't know. I think that what we've seen the last decade is that offenses can win championships too if they are the right offenses, if they're that prolific.
Yes. And again, I think I would say, like, you know, 2010,
yeah,
2013 Auburn was – there's some good examples of that. But I do think football has changed. We are in an era of offensive dominance right now. And so, like, I love this defense, and I think our defense is awesome. Okay. I think our defense is really, really, really good. But I think, you know, this defense playing a great game against LSU or Georgia or Alabama is going to be holding them to 28.
Yeah.
Or 24.
Yeah.
So we got to get better on offense if we're going to score 24, you know, 28, 30 points against those defenses.
Yep.
I think that's it.
Absolutely.
Our next question is from Wardam Wade.
Yep.
He said, what's the biggest hindrance to Auburn's ceiling or future success? A, Gus play calling. B, lack of consistently good play by the offensive line. C, Bo Nix making freshman mistakes. Or four, yes, all of the above.
I think the offensive line right now, I think that Bo Nix would be perfectly, from what I've seen from him so far, there are quarterbacks with a lot more experience than him that I would sooner take him than them right now.
100%. And I agree 100%.
I think Gus's play calling is fine when they're able to execute it. So if the offensive line was kicking butt like it should be, his play calling wouldn't matter because things would just work.
Yeah, I don't think the play calling has been the issue this year. I think it's offensive line. All right, next question is from Joey Miller, who says, Van, glad to see you're doing so well. Here's to a speedy recovery.
Thank you, Joey.
He says, go Auburn fast with it.
That means I'm going to be going slow, right?
Yes. He says, a portion of the Auburn family is losing their minds over the first half rushing yards and the offensive line and the running backs. I value your opinions. Is it time to hit the big red panic button, or is this typical Auburn offense while trying to figure out what it does best?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where we're going to turn in the running back stable to change things right now. I mean, if the offensive line can't just open up holes for anybody, then you need somebody to go out there and make plays like, you know, Cadillac or one of those guys. And I don't know that we've got a running back that is available and healthy and ready to roll right now that I would bet that on, you know?
You made a great point there. That's not Whitlow's style. He needs holes and space. A different style running back, DJ Williams, hit, would be more effective with the way the offensive line is currently working. But Whitlow is what we have. And so it's a mesh of two different styles. Mm-hmm. You know, Whitlow's running style and the offensive line, what they can do right now, don't go perfectly together. Our next question is from Scott Looney, who says, is there an example of an Auburn team or another SEC team ever fixing a bad special teams unit in midseason?
Oh,
he says, maybe I'm misremembering, but it seems unlike the other units that where something gets better or worse. What you see is what you get with kicking, covering, returning, et cetera. Thoughts?
I think we have seen it. I think it was under Tuberville that our kick return or kick defensive team, defending team, was bad, and Tuberville just pulled them all and stuck like the starting offensive and defensive stars out there, and it got much better. Do you remember that?
Yes, and again, like, we're not playing starting defensive players on punt coverage, but you have to think if we put, you know, Denson and Pepo and some of those guys out there, we'd tackle a little bit better. So
yeah,
I do think that we can fix this. I think he makes a good point. Like, if you have a bad kicker or a bad punter, then there's nothing you can do.
No, there's nothing.
Or if you have return guys that fumble the ball every time, then there's not a lot you can do about that. And we've been in that situation too. But I think in this situation, we can replace those guys and we can work on, you know, the kind of the angle, the height and distance of the punting in terms of the coverage. So, but 100%, I'm going to be watching it the next couple of weeks to see what changes.
You know, when the kicker has a problem like that, sometimes coaches have open tryouts for walk-ons.
Oh, yes. All right, Chris Thrash says, Van, thinking of you, man. Incredible, you're still so dedicated to do shows.
There I am.
All right. The next question is from Willie Carden, who says, hey, guys, I feel like there's been a lot of criticism of Gus and the team, yet here we are with Auburn sitting 2-0 and one of the best wins in the country so far. The defense shut Oregon down and held Tulane to 6, and we knew it would take a little while for Bo to get rolling. What gives? This is the best-case scenario for the beginning of the season. Kind of sick of criticism from some of our own fans.
Yeah, amen.
And the Inferno in Knoxville is a vivid reminder that it's great to be an Auburn Tiger.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I always want to point out, I mean, people have no hindsight, apparently, no memory. But, you know, a whole lot of Pat Dye's years were spent with people complaining that we were wasting a great defense with, you know, Pat Dye running up the middle three plays and punting. So if you're sitting around going, man, I sure do hate Gus. I pine for those good old days of Pat Dye. Understand, they were saying the same things about the Pat Dye era that we hear about now. Some things have never changed. It's the same complaints. And people just don't want to, you know, don't want to believe it. Or don't selectively remember it.
It's fair. I think I have one more.
Okay. All right, then we'll take our tour around the SEC and wrap things up, and I'm going to go collapse on the sofa because I'm getting worn.
Yeah, we're about done. Samuel Salvatore just says, Van, wish you prayers for health issues.
Thank you.
He says, how scary would this team be, granted that the defense is legit, if the offense was doing just enough?
Oh, man. And
how scary could this Auburn team be if the offense was clicking?
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
He's
got to hope they get it around. They come around.
Here's a picture for you. Again, I'm just going to paint a little picture. I mean, the defense stays where it is. We fix the punt coverage issue. And, you know, a month from now, the Auburn starting receiver lineup is Seth Williams, Anthony Schwartz, Hastings, and Eli Stove.
Yeah.
And we're playing those guys. We're doing the zone read with Bo Nix. We're throwing it downfield, you know, to Williams and Schwartz and underneath to Stove and Hastings. And that's opening up things for the running game. And Nick's running the ball is opening up things for the running, you know, for the running backs as well. And it's we're running Schwartz on the end around, making teams back off with that kind of, you know, with him running downfield and stuff. Again, the other part is we need the receivers to be in there and be healthy because Tulane of often just put seven or eight guys in the box and kind of dared us to throw the ball.
They did.
And so we did throw the ball.
Yep.
But we weren't particularly effective at it. But I think down the road, Nix is going to get better and better at this. We're going to find out what he does well, what the receivers can, you know, work with him on. And I think that part of the game is going to be immeasurably better, you know.
Yeah.
Four or five games from now. I'm just telling you, that's Kamar's coming. And I think the defense is legitimately one of the best defenses we've ever had. They are so good. They're well coached. Yep. And this is the other part that I think Auburn fans, you know, whine all the time, but, you know, for years, we don't make adjustments. This team makes adjustments during the game on both sides of the ball, especially defensively. We're really good at making adjustments. The offense has made adjustments too. You can see it.
Yeah.
And
absolutely,
they work. So, I mean, again, I think that's an example of coaching. So,
I agree. All right. And again, if we miss anybody that had a good question and we're not doing the thank each individual person tonight, it's just because I'm running on about 15% of my usual energy, so I'm getting close to the end. But let's take a quick trip.
Trip around the FTC.
Well, Arkansas demonstrated that it is possible to be worse than Ole Miss.
Somebody's got to be seventh.
Oh, boy. I didn't get to see any of that one, but I'm assuming it was pretty horrific.
Ole Miss fixed some of their offensive issues from the first week, and they looked a little bit better. But again, they're still this just separated the sixth team from the seventh team. That's all it did.
I had the LSU-Texas game on the terrible television I had in my hospital room Saturday night. Amy and I were watching the Auburn game on the iPad because we couldn't get ESPN2 in my hospital room. So we had the LSU-Texas game, and I was just watching the Auburn game, and every time I'd look up, somebody scored in the LSU-Texas game. So I went back and watched a bunch of it on fast-forward mode on YouTube, you know, this morning, and it was just up and down the field. That was a track meet. What in the world do you make of that? And what do we make of LSU hanging 45 on Texas but giving up 38?
Well, I mean, again, Texas is good. They're good on offense. They have a good quarterback. They have good receivers. So, and they're a Big 12 team. They're used to playing in these shootouts and scoring 35 points. So, yeah. I, you know, it didn't shock me that they did that. But I'm going to tell you what, this is not the Les Miles full, you know, student body left LSU offense. That is gone. Okay. If you think you're going to see that LSU again, you are mistaken. They are running the Saints playbook. They are very aggressive in the passing game. Joe Burrow, the quarterback, looks great. I mean, really good, really confident, really accurate. I mean, he is clearly the third best quarterback in the SEC right now. I mean, it's like Fromm and Tua and him. And I think there's a giant gap after this.
I was going to say, watching that game this morning on YouTube where it was just like, you know, clip, you just play, you know, it cut out the space in between. It looked like Burrow was throwing the ball in the end zone every other play if they were across the 50-yard line. Now, there's a difference between just chucking it 80 yards downfield and hoping somebody runs under it. It looked like a designed, very specific pass pattern into the end zone on almost every other play. And that
100%.
That shocked me.
Their passing game is very sophisticated and very, very scary right now. I'm going to be honest. Like, I'm scared of going to Baton Rouge right now.
Yeah.
Because I think, their defense isn't – it's a step down a little bit from where they've been, but they still got a bunch of future NFL players. I mean, their defensive line is good, but it's not as great as it has been. And they missed, you know, the linebacker, Devin White, from last year. But they still got that safety, Delfitt. They got good cornerbacks. And the difference is you can't beat them 10-6 anymore. No. I mean, this is I don't know if you watched at the end of the game, but at the end of the game, they were beating Texas by 8, I think. And LSU had the ball. And they had 3rd and 17. And this was a scenario where old LSU would have run a draw, mm-hmm. or run the ball, run the clock, you know, play defensive field position. And they were throwing the heck out of the ball and basically burned Texas, scored another touchdown. They were super aggressive throwing the ball up a score on the road at Texas. So I don't expect to see the old LSU offense. Expect to see something completely different. And our defense is going to have to be ready for that game because their offense was good.
I don't think that they will score 45 on us, but I don't think we'll score 38 on them.
100%. I think you're right. My only prediction I'm going to make is Bama's not going to shut them out this year.
Right. Oh, man. This is an LSU team that could beat Alabama. Not saying they will. But they could put enough points on the board if their defense can just hold up, I think. The Clemson A&M game wasn't what I was hoping because, once again, just like last year, A&M had many scoring opportunities in the first quarter and ended up with like 3 points out of all these trips in the red zone. They just couldn't quite get it done. And then Clemson kind of pulled away. But A&M gave them best they could, I guess. It was I think it was really more like a 24-3 Clemson win. But
100%. I mean, A&M scored like the last play of the game.
Yeah, but it was for a whole lot of the game though. A&M held Clemson's offense in check.
They did. Their defense played well. Again, I love their defensive coordinator Elko. I think he did a really good job taking away the Clemson running game. And A&M's defensive line is pretty good, but I mean their offense, they really miss Travion Williams, I think. And I heard their starting running back got hurt in this game; he's out for the season now. So that's a big loss for them. And their receivers, you know, they have a couple of decent guys, but there's no Mike Williams or those kind of guys on that receiving core. They had a really hard time moving the ball against Clemson. Their offensive line isn't as good as it was last year.
I have nothing to say about the other games from this past week. When I look ahead, the only game I really see of interest as we wrap up here, because my wife is coming and she's saying she's about to unplug my microphone. She's had me on a short leash tonight. The only game I'm really kind of curious about is Kansas State at Mississippi State, just because that's a fairly even matchup, I think, and it'll be fun to see. So,
yeah.
Otherwise, this is pretty much a crap weekend of football.
For SEC football,
yes. For the SEC, yeah. So, any other games we want to mention real quick that I'm forgetting before we wrap up tonight?
No, other than we're all thankful we're not Tennessee fans.
Oh, good heavens, yeah, absolutely. So, Well, I've been thankful for that my whole life, but especially lately. Especially lately. So, all right. Well, it's not our longest show ever, but it's about the best I can do for you guys right now. And I'll have this one out to the public probably on Wednesday morning. We're recording it Tuesday night, a day later than usual because of my situation. But I'll put it together Wednesday morning and get out to the public. John, I appreciate you being flexible and working with me at this time. And we got it done.
I'm glad you're on the road to recovery. And War Eagle, man.
War Eagle, John.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.